Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. The campaign of Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders continues to surge. Last weekend, more than 70,000 people on the West Coast came out to hear Sanders speak, and the event in Portland drew over 28,000 people.
All across this country, people are sick and tired of establishment politics, establishment economics, and they want real change.
And this week, for the first time ever, a new poll in New Hampshire showed Sanders ahead of Hillary Clinton by a margin of 44% to 37%. Despite these successes, Sanders faces questions about his ability to expand his base and whether he'll be able to attract African American and Latino voters. What's behind the Sanders surge, and what will the next few months hold for the Sanders campaign? These are some of the questions we have for our guest today. With us, Norwich University political science professor Megan Remmel and former Middlebury College political science professor Eric Davis. Great to have you back on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Good afternoon, Bob.
So Sanders is drawing the largest crowds of any presidential candidate. No one else is even close. Big crowds last weekend in Los Angeles, Portland, Seattle. That basic stump speech hasn't changed very much since Sanders formally announced in May in Burlington. Here he is in Portland last weekend.
The people of America understand that corporate greed is destroying our country, that American politics is now dominated by big money interests, and that much of the mainstream media is prepared to talk about everything except that is what is most important.
So, Megan, the Sanders campaign seems to be continually exceeding most people's expectations. A month ago, 6 weeks ago, he was attracting 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 people at these events. Now we're talking about 28,000 people cramming into a sports arena in Portland to hear Sanders speak. What's going on? What's he tapping into?
I think he's tapping into a couple of places. I think one place he's tapping into is people who probably weren't super involved in the presidential race. This is still obviously incredibly early in the primary process, and so a lot of people weren't paying attention yet, and I think a lot of people maybe just showing up out of curiosity of who is this guy that Jon Stewart's mocking on The Daily Show. I think part of it is as Hillary Clinton continues to make stumbles in her campaign, people who might have just been kind of wishy-washy in their commitment to her are now seeing this other candidate who is certainly speaking to a lot of the Democratic issues and are at least in theory open to the idea of joining on somebody else's bandwagon. So the combination of just kind of the curiosity element to me and the fact that Clinton continues to make somewhat elementary mistakes for somebody with her political savvy is certainly helping Bernie pick up some steam, at least in the PR department.
So how much of this is that some Democratic supporters are kind of lukewarm about Hillary Clinton? They look at this email situation, not sure what to make of it. Is that a fairly big factor in this?
It's been a factor. Even before the stumble started, even before Sanders threw his hat into the ring, I think a lot of Democrats just kind of went, oh, so this is going to be a coronation and she's going to be the nominee and there's really no point to get all that excited. This is just inevitable. As she continues to make stumbles, people are going, well, maybe it doesn't have to be inevitable. Maybe she doesn't have to be our candidate. So as she continues to make these mistakes, it is feeding into the Democrats' idea and the party establishment's idea of maybe we could have another candidate. And that's where you get these rumors about Al Gore joining the race.
Al Gore, Joe Biden. It's really interesting how this is developing. Eric, what do you make of the Sanders surge to date?
Well, I would note a few things, Bob. First of all, the huge crowds have been in strongly Democratic areas on the West Coast, and he's doing very well in New Hampshire and elsewhere in New England. I am very interested to see how Sanders is going to do when he begins campaigning in some of the larger states that won't hold primaries until March, but that are important in terms of sending large delegations to the Democratic National Convention and are important in electing the president in November. These are places like Michigan, Pennsylvania, Florida, Ohio, states where There's perhaps not as much of a progressive movement in the Democratic Party, but more of a sort of old-time labor liberal strength. So I'm interested in how Sanders will do in those places. I'm also very interested in seeing how he will do in states that have a relatively large number of African-American and Latino voters. About 30% of the people who participate in Democratic primaries and caucuses nationwide are non-white voters. Now, that percentage varies from state to state. It's very small in Iowa. It's very small in New Hampshire. It's quite large in some of the southern states and in California. The first two tests for Sanders in that regard will be South Carolina, where in previous elections, close to half of the Democratic primary voters have been African-American. And then the couple weeks after that in Nevada, where about a third of the Democratic primary voters are Latino. And all the polls I've seen so far, both nationally and state-based, indicate that Hillary Clinton continues to have a large lead over Bernie Sanders among African-American and Latino voters.
So, Eric, if you were part of Hillary Clinton's campaign team, would you be concerned about Sanders' growing popularity?
Well, I'd be concerned about Sanders, but I'd also be concerned more about my own weaknesses, and I assume that her advisors are telling her that. Now, how she's responding remains to be seen. But one of the internals in this New Hampshire poll that had Sanders ahead was quite interesting. Now, the 7-point lead for Sanders was within the margin of error in the poll, and other polls taken in New Hampshire about the same time showed Clinton ahead. But one of the follow-up questions asked voters to give a favorable and unfavorable opinion of both candidates and to talk about their enthusiasm. And both candidates were actually viewed favorably. But the enthusiasm level for Bernie Sanders was much higher than the enthusiasm level for Hillary Clinton. So Clinton has to figure out a way to get the people who think still that she's going to end up as the nominee enthusiastic about her now in the primaries and caucuses, and then continue that enthusiasm in the general election. And I think this is one of the reasons. I'm not sure whether this Al Gore speculation is more than someone talked to somebody else, but I think the Joe Biden one may be a little more serious. There were reports in several news organizations today that Biden, while on vacation in South Carolina, is talking with leading South Carolina Democrats to find out what the lay of the land is down there and whether, if he got into the race late, he could still put together an organization that would be competitive by the time of their primary in February. And so I think the problems that Hillary Clinton has are due in part to enthusiasm for Bernie Sanders, but also in part to her own weaknesses, which she is the one who has to address.
Today on the program, we're looking at the Bernie Sanders presidential campaign. You can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Did you ever think the Sanders campaign would get this far? Why do you think he's doing so well? What are the challenges that Sanders faces in the coming months? And do you see any scenario where Sanders is the Democratic presidential nominee? Your thoughts about Bernie's campaign, 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net or give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. Megan, we had that poll that came out in New Hampshire. Sanders at 44%, Hillary Clinton at 37%, a huge turnaround from 5 months ago when Bernie was at 8%. Now, also at the same time, they were rating Elizabeth Warren, who had roughly 22% of the vote. But yet, this is a startling comeback for Sanders. Do you think in part it's because Hillary Clinton's campaign has kind of ignored Sanders and allowed Sanders to define himself and also Hillary Clinton to some degree?
That's certainly a part of it. The Sanders campaign has largely been ignored by the Clinton campaign. I think that was probably a smart move at the beginning when he was just kind of this crazy socialist from Vermont. But as he's picked up steam and the Clinton campaign has continued to essentially ignore his campaign, it's allowing him to make noise, and she's not responding to that noise. Part of it is, as you mentioned, when you look at the polls from 5 or 6 months ago, when there was debate about whether Elizabeth Warren was going to run, Bernie has luckily been able to consolidate that and keep those people in his camp, keep the people who really wanted Elizabeth Warren to run as far-left voters. So he's been able – a lot of those numbers, if you look at the people who supported Warren and Sanders back 5 or 6 months ago, are now all solidly in the Sanders camp. So he's been able to keep these voters that were predisposed to liking him. But it's not helping the Hillary Clinton campaign to continue to ignore Sanders while he is – continuing to harp on policies and she's not responding to them. I understand her not wanting to respond to anything about the email campaign, certainly, or the email issue, certainly from the Republican side, but she can't ignore the policy issues for much longer without people starting to say maybe she doesn't actually have any plans for those policies.
Does she have to walk a fine line, though? Because if she's too critical of Sanders, the Sanders voters, she's going to need those voters if, in fact, she becomes the Democratic nominee. She doesn't want to alienate them. But at the same time, she does need to highlight some policy differences with Sanders.
This is all typical of the problems of having a primary system and then a general election system, where the voters in the primary system are your more party faithful. They tend to be more ideologically extreme on both sides of the aisle. And so you need to appeal to them in the primary process to make it through. But those are not the people who are going to get you elected in the general election. Yes, they're going to show up to vote, but they're not going to be enough to actually get you to 270 electoral college votes. So, yes, she, as the kind of more middle of the road candidate, has to try to figure out how to appeal to people who are diehard liberals and Democrats and hopefully not simultaneously alienate the general election voters who aren't going to participate necessarily in these Democratic primaries, but are certainly going to remember the things that she said back earlier in the campaign. And I guarantee you the Republican candidate is going to remind her of things that she said during this primary process.
Eric, you were talking about that poll earlier and some of the questions on it. There was also this question that I found. Which candidate supports issues important to you? Many, many more people chose Bernie Sanders over Hillary Clinton. Is that a sign of the strength of Sanders' economic message?
Well, I'd pick up on the point that Megan made, that I think the people who are going to be voting in the primary in New Hampshire are probably more liberal and or progressive than New Hampshire residents as a whole in responding to Sanders. I also think that Hillary, to this point, has not talked very much about issues in her campaign. She's made a push this week for a plan regarding college costs, student loans, and so forth. But some of the big issues of the campaign that Sanders has been raising, income inequality, some foreign policy issues, the role of interest groups in funding political campaigns in the United States, super PACs, some of the recent Supreme Court decisions, none of these issues have really been addressed very much by Hillary Clinton. Her themes, if you go to her webpage, it's mostly about sort of ready to lead, it says. But voters will expect more than that. And I think, again, Sanders is filling that vacuum in some ways.
Let's go to our callers and start with John, who's calling from Stratford. Hi, John. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Particularly, Eric, I happen to have read David McCulloch's biography of Truman this past spring, and there seems to be some similarities here to Truman's 1948 campaign, in which absolutely no pundits, no papers gave Truman a chance of winning the presidency. Yet he said, "I don't care. I'm going to go out and speak to the people." And he did, you know, a famous railroad stop campaign. He spoke to people's conditions. He gave them hell, and he got elected. I think there might be something similar going on in a new updated version based with new technology, using the internet instead of radio, instead of trains. But I think there's some real similarities between Truman's 48 in this election.
All right, that's an interesting point. There's a couple of other historical analogies I would make. One is to 1968. In 68, Eugene McCarthy did much better than expected in New Hampshire. He didn't win that primary. Lyndon Johnson won it. But McCarthy did so well that, in effect, he both forced Lyndon Johnson out of the race. Johnson withdrew a few weeks later and created an opening for Bobby Kennedy to get in. Now, the Democrats ended up nominating that year Hubert Humphrey, who was Johnson's vice president. But McCarthy's impact on the primary was doing better than expected in New Hampshire and leading to those other changes in the candidate force. And Sanders could have a similar impact if he does better than expected in New Hampshire. I also, in my view, see Sanders as very similar to other sort of insurgent-slash-progressive campaigns who've run for the Democratic nomination over the last 35 years, starting with Ted Kennedy in 1980, Gary Hart in 1984, Jesse Jackson in 1988, Paul Tsongas in 1992, Bill Bradley in 2000, and Howard Dean in 2004. And all of those people had a surge in the fall and the early winter. Some of them did much better than expected in Iowa and New Hampshire. And then they all flamed out in the March-April timeframe once the more mainstream candidates like Walter Mondale or John Kerry, to give just two examples, ended up with the nominations. And at this point, I want to say at this point, but at this point, I don't see anything significantly different between Bernie Sanders and that other list of candidates I mentioned. Ted Kennedy did make it on to the convention, but the rest of them ended up fizzling out once the primary and caucus calendar got to the big, electorally important delegate-rich states in March and April. And at this point, that would be my projection as to what would happen to the Sanders campaign also.
Megan, as you mentioned, some talk about Joe Biden entering this race. In the New Hampshire poll, 46% of those people responding said they wanted Biden in the race, 42% they did not. Sanders says he's not concerned about Biden taking votes away from his own campaign because Bernie described Biden as, quote, a conventional politician, basically much like Clinton. Here's how he phrased it.
I've known Joe Biden for many years and I'm very fond of Joe. But I think the American people who are seeing the middle class of this country disappearing, massive levels of income and wealth inequality, a campaign finance system which is literally corrupt now, owned by billionaires as a result of this disastrous Citizens United Supreme Court decision, want to go beyond conventional establishment politics.
So do you think Bernie is right that if Joe Biden gets in this race, he takes votes away from Hillary Clinton and not from Bernie Sanders?
I think he's half right. I think Sanders is definitely correct in that if Biden were to enter the race, that's going to cause a splinter in the current supporting bloc for Hillary Clinton, just because he's probably more similar to her ideologically than she is to Bernie Sanders. However, Bernie Sanders, to me, when you look at the polls, when you look at kind of nationwide polls and in non-Iowa, New Hampshire states, he's kind of leveled off in his support. He may still be going up, but it's certainly not by the same increments that it's been in the past. So I'm wondering if he's starting to tap out and just there aren't that number of liberal, progressive, very Democratic voters out there. And he's going to need to pick up some of these voters that might jump ship to Joe Biden or who would stay with Hillary Clinton. He's certainly going to need to appeal to them if he wanted to be in the general election. So, yes, I do think that Biden probably immediately hurts Clinton more. Just in as soon as he enters the race, he would take support away from Hillary Clinton. But Bernie Sanders needs some of that support as well, both to win the primary process, but especially to win the general election. So it's not like this particularly, I think, helps Bernie's chances either.
Eric, if Joe Biden gets into this race, how does it change the dynamics of the contest?
Well, I think on domestic issues, there's not very much difference between Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton. So it then becomes, I think, for many voters, do they think that Biden might have a better chance of holding on to the presidency than Hillary Clinton does? But there's a couple of things that need to be remembered about Joe Biden. First of all, it's not insignificant that he is vice president today and not president. He's run for president twice in the past, unsuccessfully. So one has to ask, if he did enter the race this year, why would the outcome be any different than it was the two previous times he ran? Second, and I'm not sure either Biden or Hillary Clinton want to go here, but on some foreign policy issues, there are some significant differences between Biden and Clinton, at least as indicated by some of the memoirs of officials in Obama's first term, people like Bob Gates and Leon Panetta, who were in the foreign policy side of the Obama administration, indicate that there were a number of interventions where Obama ended up agreeing to send more troops to Afghanistan or get more involved in some other situations in the Middle East, where Biden was quite cautious about it. And again, I'm not sure the extent to which either Biden or Clinton want to reveal the internal disagreements of Obama's first term, especially with Obama first still in office. But that would be some interesting lines of disagreement between the two of them.
Today on the program, we're looking at Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today, we're looking at the campaign of Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders. With us today, Norwich University political science professor Megan Remmel and also former Middlebury College political science professor Eric Davis. Your thoughts? 1-800-639-2211. Let's turn to Ricky in Burlington. Hi, Ricky. What's on your mind today?
So far, I'm voting for Bernie Sanders because he's always been good to the people of Burlington and has always stuck up for them. And I'd like to see him win presidency. But on the other hand, I'd like to see Hillary win presidency because it'll break the ice for a first woman president.
So, Ricky, which way do you vote?
I'm not sure.
And that's probably a dilemma that many people face. Megan, that people are looking at Hillary Clinton and thinking the time has come to have the first woman president in the United States, and that's the overriding factor. How strong of a factor do you think that is?
I definitely think that's a factor for some voters, and a decent, if not a plurality, of the Democratic base is women. But I do also think that people are probably more concerned about their own individual pocketbooks and their own personal well-being before making history. So if Hillary Clinton were to make history and that's what's best in my best personal interest, great, if those coincide. But people tend to be pretty self-interested in their votes first. I don't see huge swaths of women, particularly not women who didn't already at least have sympathies towards the Democratic Party, switching sides to vote for Hillary Clinton just because she's Hillary Clinton.
Let's turn to Dorothy in Johnson. Hi, Dorothy. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I am not hearing this label quite as often. At the beginning of Senator Sanders' campaign, he was always introduced as the socialist Bernie Sanders. And I think a lot of people are afraid of that label. And I'd like to hear your guests define Bernie as a socialist and what that means. And I'd love to see the campaign issue a newsletter or a white paper or something that defines that label so people are not so afraid of what that means.
Okay. Eric, about a month ago, Senator Claire McCaskill, who is a supporter of Hillary Clinton's, said to reporters, "Do you know something about Bernie Sanders? He's a socialist, and you're giving Sanders a pass on that." Sanders responded and said, "He mentions that he's a Democratic socialist at almost every event." So what about Dorothy's concern that when people hear socialist, that's going to be a negative?
Yeah, there are some voters for whom the term socialist has un-American connotations, and that's something that's built up over a long time and over American history. Where I place Bernie Sanders is I would place him right in the mainstream of the Western social democratic tradition. Now, that is not a strong tradition in the United States. It never has been, although there have been some periods of American history where it was stronger than others. But in Western Europe, these are mainstream political parties that are in and out of government all the time. If Bernie Sanders were running for office in a country like the UK or one of the Scandinavian countries or some of the other larger European nations, he'd be right in the center of the political spectrum there. Social Democrats who want to see a larger role for government, more public ownership of utilities, transportation, things like that, stronger social welfare programs, that whole mix of policies. But that political tradition has never been particularly strong in the United States. One of the things I have found interesting in some of the national news coverage about Bernie Sanders in the last month or so is this sort of national report is trying to puzzle out exactly where he fits vis-a-vis the Democratic Party. Because as we know here in Vermont, he has never run for anything as a Democrat in the 40-plus years that he has been on Vermont ballots. Way back in the very early years, it was his Liberty Union, and then ever since he was elected mayor of Burlington in 1981, he's run as an independent. And yes, he is a member of the Democratic Caucus in the United States Senate, but that's affiliating with the Democratic Party, not being formally a member of the Democratic Party. And this whole aspect of his relationship with the Democratic Party historically in Vermont and now nationally is one of the things I find fascinating about the Sanders campaign.
Let's turn to Richard, who's calling from Langdon, New Hampshire. Hi, Richard. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks. I have just two comments. I had one, and then I wanted to respond to what Ricky from Burlington said. That first of all, I'm 60. I'm a white, somewhat educated male, so I've seen a lot of elections, and everyone is ready for a woman president. There's no question about that. It's just the right woman. My comment is really anyone who thinks Bernie doesn't have a chance must have been asleep in the 2008 election when Hillary also apparently had the nomination all sewn up. And to everyone's surprise, we elected a black president, which was certainly as far from anything possible at that time as electing a socialist is now. So I'll just leave you with that comment. Thank you.
Okay, Richard, thanks very much. We want to turn to Alex, who's calling in from Plattsburgh, New York. Hi, Alex. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I just wanted to make the comment that I really disagree with your guests on Bernie Sanders' campaign leveling out. I was wondering if they had any kind of evidence of that. It seems like from everything I've been watching, and I've been watching it closely, he's just really starting to rocket off. And I certainly don't see it slowing down at all, especially against Hillary with the scandals that are coming out. It seems like she's really got her hands full, and if she doesn't think so, I think she should think so.
Okay, Alex. Megan, there were some polls, I believe, in Iowa that showed that he's kind of topped out, at least at this point. Who knows what's going to happen in the weeks ahead. Was that one of the factors that you were thinking about when you said that perhaps he's stalling out in some areas?
I certainly understand where the caller's coming from. If you read the media or watch TV, it certainly seems like he's got kind of a fire under him right now. But I do think he's picked up all the support that is kind of the low-hanging fruit for him. So it's going to be much more challenging from here on out for him to pick up the supporters that he would need to actually get the nomination or even more so to get the general election. I think he's doing well. He's got an appeal to him, but he still hasn't quite figured out how to speak to a lot of the core Democratic constituency. And when you do look at the polls, both nationally and in individual states, Hillary Clinton, while her approval has gone down, her favorability a bit has gone down, she still, even in spite of this scandal, still holding on pretty strong in the mid-60s in all of the core Democratic groups. So until she really starts to lose some of those voters that Sanders might be able to pick up, I'm having a hard time seeing him actually get the support he would need to make it really far into the primary process and certainly into the general election.
Last weekend in Seattle, Sanders was speaking at an event that was held to celebrate Social Security and Medicare. He was scheduled to be one of the last speakers on that agenda. And as he took the stage, a small number of protesters who said that they represented the Black Lives Matter organization demanded that they be allowed to speak about important racial issues that they say Sanders is not addressing in his campaign. Sanders turned to the organizer of the event for some guidance.
Thank you, Seattle, for being one of the most progressive cities in the United States of America.
We'll ask him. Get him in check and we're shutting this event down now.
If you do not listen to her, event will be shut down right now.
Then the organizer said the protesters could speak to the crowd, but only after Sanders had spoken. But that idea did not sit well with the protesters.
We are trying to be reasonable.
We are reasonable.
We are trying. We're going to give you. We're going to let you on the mic. We are going to give you the mic. We will after Senator Sanders. After Senator Sanders. After Senator Sanders. After Senator Sanders.
Sanders left the event without speaking, and later that evening, he addressed this issue at a big campaign rally.
As somebody who has one of the strongest lifetime civil rights records in the United States Congress, no president will fight harder to end the stain of racism in this country and reform our criminal justice system, period.
Eric Sanders often talks about racial issues in terms of economics. Is that part of the problem here as far as some of the protesters are concerned?
I think it is very much so. One of the things that strikes me about the Sanders campaign is he is one of the most ideologically oriented presidential candidates we've seen in a long time. Now, I don't mean that in any disparaging sense, but Sanders has a framework that he has used to analyze politics and political issues for his entire career. He's approaching politics today, running for the president, the same way he did when he was running for mayor of Burlington 35 years ago. And in Bernie Sanders' framework, economic analysis, the distribution of economic resources, class conflict, those are the organizing principles of political issues and political conflict in the United States. And what I think Sanders is now beginning to realize with the Black Lives Matter protests and others is that there are some Americans for whom that economic-based analysis doesn't help explain the way they see the world. For some people, a racial context is very, very important in the way they look at politics. For others, it might be a gender context. For still others, it might be the history of the regions where they live. A good example of this is just this week, there's been a lot of attention in national news media to it being the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Voting Rights Act by President Johnson. There was a long article about it in the New York Times Magazine a couple weeks ago, to which President Obama responded with a letter to the editor. But I think one could argue that the Voting Rights Act and the issues associated with it, and was the Supreme Court right in allowing in ruling parts of it unconstitutional a couple of years ago, because history has changed according to the court, the Voting Rights Act and that collection of issues to me is a good example of an important political issue in the United States that does not fit in the economic framework that tends to be dominant in Bernie Sanders' campaign analysis. So I think as he's making the transition from someone who's just run in Vermont for 35 years to now someone who's running nationally with a much more diverse electorate, he's learning that perhaps he has to adjust his framework of analysis a little bit. And that's one of the most interesting things to me as a political scientist about his campaign.
Megan, what are your thoughts about these protests and what it tells us about the Sanders campaign?
I couldn't agree with Eric more. Obviously, Sanders has always been very much based in an economic mindset. And I have no doubt that blacks across the United States recognize and are sympathetic to the Sanders rhetoric about economic inequality. However, for them, it is clearly a symptom of a greater problem. It's not just that the economic inequality is racially based. It's the economic inequality is because of race. It's not just that this is kind of how the die have fallen out. I think blacks across the United States think that, yes, economically we are very disadvantaged, but it is because we are black, first and foremost. And so as Sanders made some stumbles initially about not being able to kind of connect these two, I do agree that he is trying his best to make this economic inequality argument and still recognize that it's not just economics for a large segment of the Democratic population.
Today on the program, we're looking at the campaign of Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders. What are your thoughts? 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today, we're looking at the campaign of Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders. With us today, former Middlebury College political science professor Eric Davis and Norwich University political science professor Megan Remmel. Your thoughts? 1-800-639-2211. Let's turn to Russ in Chelsea. Hey, Russ, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I totally agree with Eric and Megan that Bernie really has to broaden his message and his appeal. I absolutely believe that he's exactly what we need for the next president. My concern is, though, that if he is able to win the primary, that we would be basically handing the election to the Republicans, because I don't believe that in the general election that he's going to be able to garner enough support to become president.
Rush, do you think that depends on who the Republican nominee is?
I think that there is a wide range as far as the Republican nominee is concerned, but I do believe that Bernie is getting his support from the far left and the progressives, and that just is not a large enough proportion of the population in order to be able to take the Electoral College.
Okay, Russ, thanks very much. Let's turn to Gary, who is calling us from Raleigh, North Carolina. Hey, Gary, welcome Hi. To the program.
Hello.
Hey, what's on your mind today?
Well, I was calling just with a comment and a question on your views on the Democratic National Convention debate schedule released recently, and specifically in terms of the number of debates, which seems very low, and the delay in the debates, and I guess I should preface it with saying I am a Bernie Sanders supporter, but it seems that everything seems skewed to limit Bernie Sanders' exposure to the mainstream media, and he's not really given a chance to get his name out there, and I just want to know your thoughts on that.
Okay. Megan, four debates before February 1st. That's the date of the Iowa caucus. Essentially one a month, I think, starting in the middle of September. Does Gary have a point? This seems to be skewed towards Hillary Clinton.
I can see it both ways. So part of this is just practical. It's the number of candidates that are on the Democratic side versus the number on the Republican side. There's just a lot of candidates on the Republican side that need or are going to want to be heard. So you're going to have tons of debates, whereas there aren't nearly as many candidates on the Democratic side. It does seem like it, at first blush to me, it does seem like it's trying to help Hillary Clinton's trying to minimize her exposure, the places where she can make gaffes. But it also does the same thing for Bernie Sanders, in that he is very far left by American standards, as Eric had pointed out. But that does mean that this is a place where he could make some statements that could come back to haunt him if he were to make it to the general election or even further into the primary process, that there now are a lot more sound clips on a national stage that are national exposure. I mean, this last Republican debate was the best watched debate in history. So I think this actually might also help Bernie Sanders. Yes, it's probably initially designed to kind of cushion Hillary Clinton, but it does mean that Sanders gets some of that same protection as well.
Eric, with such a small number of debates, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of attention on these events. What does Sanders have to do to be successful in those debates?
Well, the first thing that's from Sanders' point of view is just being up there on the stage with Hillary Clinton and whoever else qualifies. There's a criterion in terms of polling support that Martin O'Malley and Jim Webb and Lincoln Chafee may or may not make. Frankly, I'm surprised that Hillary Clinton agreed to as many as six debates. One of the classic strategies for frontrunners and incumbents is to avoid debates if at all possible. We've seen that here in Vermont, where both Jim Douglas and Peter Shumlin, when they were running for governor, wanted lots of debates. But once they held office, they tried to minimize the number of debates. And it's the same thing with Hillary Clinton. So the fact that she did agree to four before the first primary and caucus, I think, is significant. Bernie Sanders would like to use these debates to introduce himself to a larger audience. Although he's attracted lots of people in these basketball arenas in the West Coast and elsewhere, still that's much smaller than the millions of people who would watch a debate. The first one is on CNN sometime in October. So this is a way for Bernie Sanders to sort of be on equal footing with Hillary Clinton. So in my view, Bob, the first of these debates in October is going to be really important, because in many ways it will be Bernie Sanders' first exposure to a national audience that doesn't include only Democratic activists.
Let's turn to John, who's calling from Peachum. Hi, John. What's on your mind today?
Yes, I'm from Peachum, Vermont, and I'm a retired Air Force Colonel fighter pilot. And I'd like to say something to get hopes get spread around. Bernie Sanders has done more for any individual in this country to help veterans. And I believe that he deserves their vote, and I hope they get it. And that's a lot of people. So that's all I have to say, and I hope he wins.
Okay, John, thanks for your phone call. Megan, when the Democrats controlled the Senate, Bernie was the chairman of the Subcommittee on Veterans Affairs at a time when there was a big controversy there. There are a lot of veterans who feel very much the same way that John does.
Undoubtedly. Sanders has historically been very supportive of veterans' causes. The problem is that I think a lot of veterans are also concerned about defense policy, concerned about military spending, concerned about foreign policy. I teach at Norwich, so I'm surrounded by this kind of mindset. So to me, it's going to be kind of a something that tears these kind of voters in two directions about whether or not they're going to be more concerned about the defense spending side of it, or whether they're more concerned about maybe their own personal self-interest or what their lives are like after they get out of the military. So, yes, it's certainly somewhere that he should probably be a bit more active on trying to make sure that he can gather some maybe easier places to get some votes. But it does concern me, especially as Syria continues to be an issue with the Islamic State, that defense is going to continue to be an issue, and that Sanders might say some things, because that's what he truly believes, that don't appeal to parts of the veterans out there.
Eric, we've gotten a couple of emails from folks who point out that Bernie Sanders' message, economic message in particular, over the last 35 years has been incredibly consistent. We found that some quotes from Bernie back in the mid-'80s. It sounds like he was speaking yesterday. Is that an important factor for his candidacy?
I think this is a very important part of his appeal, and it's not just the substance of the message, but it also is the fact that he has been consistent. In an age in which so many candidates seem to flow with the wind and test everything with polls and focus groups before they get on a stage and make a speech, to hear someone who's saying the same things today as he did when he first ran for mayor of Burlington in 1981, or first ran for governor of Vermont in 86, or first ran for Congress in 88, is a refreshing change for many conventional politicians.
He will never be accused of being a flip-flopper.
So we've got just a couple of minutes left. Megan, what do you think are some of the major challenges facing the Sanders campaign as it moves into the fall?
I think it's some of the same issues that we've been talking about that have been issues for him for a while that obviously he's beginning to work on, trying to broaden his appeal to more of the Democratic base rather than just white, educated individuals that are kind of on the coasts. And so he has brought in his campaign spokeswoman is now a black woman. He is trying to connect race with economics better. So I think he's going to need to continue on that push. He's also, if he really genuinely wants to get into the general election, he's going to need to find a way to walk the same tightrope Hillary Clinton's walking about not alienating the more moderate section of the Democratic electorate.
Eric, what do you think the major challenges are?
I think one of them is financial. I'm looking at a calendar of primaries and caucuses. After the four early states in February, on March 1st, the same day Vermont votes, there will also be primaries in Alabama, Arkansas, Colorado, Georgia, Massachusetts, Minnesota, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, and Virginia. Hillary Clinton's fundraising advantage in the super PAC array, the array of super PACs that is behind her campaign, will give Hillary Clinton a substantial advantage on a date like March 1st when there are states all over the country that are holding primaries and caucuses.
But Eric, what happens, just hypothetically, that Bernie Sanders wins in Iowa and he follows that up with a win in New Hampshire? Could that open the floodgates for money?
It might open the floodgates a little bit. He may get more money. I mean, his goal was to raise $50 million by the end of February for the early states, and he'll more than do that. But the Hillary Clinton campaign is talking about maybe $300 million during that same time period. And when you add the super PAC supporting Hillary Clinton, you could see close to $1 billion on that side of the campaign.
And Megan, at some point, you can only spend so much money.
Yeah. Yes, money undoubtedly matters in the campaign, but he needs endorsements from major political figures. He needs more media exposure, which money would help with. But yeah, it's only going to get him so far if he only appeals to a certain part of the electorate or if he isolates part of the Democratic base.
We'll be following the Sanders campaign very closely in the weeks and months ahead. Many thanks to our panel today, Norwich University political science professor Megan Remmel and retired Middlebury College political science professor Eric Davis. Thanks very much. It was a great discussion.
Thanks.
My pleasure, Bob.
That is our program for today on Monday. The Wabanaki Confederacy is an alliance of Native American nations that first came together centuries ago. They're holding a historic conference in Shelburne. We'll talk about the conference, its history, and the issues facing Native peoples today. That's Monday on Vermont Edition. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels, Rick Sangari, and Sam Gale Rosen, with production assistance from Melody Baudette. Liam Connors directed the program. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.